Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Coca-Cola FEMSA's fourth quarter and full year 2015 conference call. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded, and all participants are in a listen-only mode. At the request of the company, we will open the conference up for questions and answers after the presentation. During this conference call, management may discuss certain forward-looking statements concerning Coca-Cola FEMSA's future performance and should be considered as good faith estimates made by the company. These forward-looking statements reflect management's expectations and are based on currently available data. Actual results are subject to future events and uncertainties, which can materially impact the company's actual performance. At this time, I'll now turn the conference over to Mr. Hector Trevino, Coca-Cola FEMSA's Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead, Mr. Trevino.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us to discuss our fourth quarter and full year 2015 results. Our company closed the year on a high note, building on our strong performance in 2014, we delivered a solid set of comparable results for 2015, supported by the continued consumer recovery in Mexico, despite prevailing consumer weakness in Brazil, continued operating and economic complexity of Venezuela, and ongoing currency volatility across our markets. In 2015, our consolidated revenue growth was driven by our pricing power and flexibility in every country, together with our increased transactions, which continue to outperform our volume growth in key markets such as Mexico, Colombia, Argentina, and Central America. Thanks to our proactive currency hedging and procurement strategy, a favorable raw material price environment for most of the year, and our operating discipline in every franchise, we continue to deliver improved bottom-line results, expanding margins in almost every country. For the full year, our consolidated comparable revenues rose 9%, our comparable operating income grew 14%, and our comparable EBITDA increased 10%. Leading to a 60 and 30 base point operating income and EBITDA margin expansion, respectively. For the fourth quarter of 2015, we achieved consolidated comparable top-line growth of 10% and comparable EBITDA growth of close to 11% with improving margins. Our positive transactions performance was supported by our continued focus on amplifying our portfolio of various alternatives, our relentless emphasis on further strengthening our point-of-sale execution, including expanded cooler coverage, and our ongoing commitment to reinforce our sparkling beverage offering through our introduction of innovative packaging solutions to connect with our consumers at the right price point for every pocket. As a result, this year we generated more than 25.7 billion total transactions across our 10 markets. Notably, we achieved solid growth in our core sparkling beverage transactions, highlighted by a 2% improvement in Argentina and Central America, a 3% gain in Mexico, a 4% increase in Colombia, and 9% growth in the Philippines. More importantly, as we continue to balance our portfolio growth, still beverages accounted for 43% of incremental transactions across our 10 countries for the year. Moreover, every operation continued to maintain or improve market share in the sparkling beverage category, while we strengthened our market position across the still beverage category. Mexico, Colombia, and Argentina continue to gain share in such relevant categories as juice and tea. Powerade recorded important market share gains in Argentina, and remarkably, we continue to extend its leading position in Mexico. We also saw encouraging month-over-month market share gains in the non-carbonated beverage category in Brazil in the second half of the year. This year, every country delivered a solid set of operating results. In Mexico, we saw continued improvement in consumer indicators, highlighted by the sustained growth in remittances in the U.S. in U.S. dollars, amplified Mexican pesos due to the devaluation, lower levels of inflation, and improved employment data. Our revenues grew close to 8% on the back of a strong 6% average price per case increase and recovering volumes, which expanded by close to 2%, driven by 3% growth in sparkling beverages and increase of more than 5% in non-carbonated beverages. Our sparkling beverage performance was supported by 3% growth of brand Coca-Cola and 6% growth in flavored sparkling beverages, mainly driven by Citral Mundet, our multi-flavor Fanta offering, and our recently launched sparkling orange and lemonade, Naranja Nada and Limona Nada. Launched in the fourth quarter, they accounted for more than a quarter of our incremental volumes in sparkling flavors for the year. More importantly, they have already captured close to 30% of the sparkling orange market. In the water category, we saw declines in both personal and bulk water as we continue to improve the category's profitability. During November, we magnify our water offering by launching Ciel Extreme flavored water and a new formula of Ciel Mineralizada, our sparkling water, now with longer-lasting bubbles. During the fourth quarter, we saw very good volume and market share performance from these new product launches, and we are encouraged by the growth prospects going forward. In the non-carbonated beverages, Jugo del Valle, Powerade, and Santa Clara continue to drive the category's performance. We more than doubled the volume from our dairy business as we continue to expand point-of-sale coverage in the traditional channel. Additionally, Powerade continued to expand its leading position in the sports drinks category, now capturing 52% of the market across our territories. Our solid top-line performance, combined with our currency hedging strategy and our operating discipline, enabled our Mexican operations to deliver an 80 basis point EBITDA margin expansion. In Central America, we grew volumes by 3%, successfully building on 5% volume growth from the previous year. By country, Costa Rica grew 1%, Panama grew 4%, and notably, Nicaragua delivered more than 8% growth for the second year in a row. These increases compensated for a decline in Guatemala. Coupled with our volume performance, our local revenue management initiatives and operating discipline enabled the region to deliver a 70 basis point EBITDA margin expansion for the year. Despite Brazil's challenging economic and consumer environment, our operations continue to achieve key accomplishments, growing market share, implementing price increases and revenue management initiatives, and expanding our franchise profitability. During the year, we gained market share in both colas and flavored sparkling beverages, outperforming the industry for the 20th consecutive month. Our ongoing focus on affordability for our consumers, underscored by the expansion of our 1 liter and 2 liter returnable presentation, continue to yield positive results. For the year, our multi-serve returnable presentations grew 7%, gaining 110 basis points of mix in the sparkling beverage category. Moreover, we continue to retool our single-serve offering to maintain competitive, affordable price points for our consumers. As part of our ongoing revenue management initiatives, we move our 200-milliliter package to 125 reais and introduce slimmer 310-milliliter can to replace our popular 350-milliliter can at the $3 price point. Our two-fold Guaraná strategy continued to deliver very positive results. On the one hand, our legacy Quachi brand grew 20% for the year across our Brazilian franchise, while continuing to gain market share, especially for our two-liter presentation. For example, since we first launched the strategy in Belo Horizonte, Quachi has gained more than 10 percentage points of share in the Guaraná category, evidencing the potential of these initiatives as we execute the rollout to the rest of our territories. On the other hand, Shred Guaraná, a premium offering, continued to generate incremental transactions as it gained momentum. In the still various category, we focus on increased client coverage together with packaging and brand innovation. For the year, Crystal Water grew 2%, our broad tea portfolio grew 13%, extending our leading market position, and our Biofood Orange portfolio grew 4%. These increases partially compensated for a decline in our juice portfolio. During the year, we reinforced our juice portfolio to offer our consumers more choices, regardless of the size of their pocket. To this end, we launched Sucos Mais entry-level nectars and strengthened our premium juice offering. Although our volume continued to perform negatively, we started to see month-over-month sequential share gains in the second half of the year in this category. Most importantly, in a complex economic and consumer environment, complicated by a 42% devaluation of the currency and a series of one-time expenses related to the opening of our new state-of-the-art plant in Minas Gerais, our pricing initiatives, our currency hedging strategy, and our focus on cost control enabled our Brazilian operation to deliver a 70 basis point EBITDA margin expansion for the year. In Colombia, we marked the third consecutive year of high single-digit volume and transaction growth. Our sparkling beverage growth was driven by a double-digit increase of Cuatro and Sprite, and a 4% increase of brand Coca-Cola. We achieved 19% volume growth in the non-carbonated beverage category, driven by Del Valle Fresh Orange and Fuse Tea. Our water category continued to perform strongly thanks to this year's relaunch of our Manantial brand and innovative one-way PET packaging for our Brisa brand. Throughout the year, we navigated a fast, volatile currency environment and increased inflation rates. To compensate for these pressures, we implemented pricing adjustments that, coupled with our currency hedging strategy, enabled us to defend our Colombia's operation gross margins. At the operating income level, we faced year-over-year margin pressures given the effects of lower comparable marketing expenses in 2014 due to extraordinary participations of the Coca-Cola Company during 2013 and 2014 as part of the Plan Colombia. In Argentina, we delivered close to 4% volume growth and close to 6% increase in transactions. Our sparkling beverage volumes remain flat, and increasing flavors driven by Sprite and Schweppes offset a slight decline in colas. Water performed strongly, growing 20%, supported by our Aquarius flavored water and Bonacqua brands. In the non-carbonated beverage category, our volumes increased by more than 30%, driven by Hi-Fi Orange, Cepita Juice, and Power, which continue to perform strongly. Our amplified beverage portfolio, the strength of our returnable packaging portfolio, and our commitment to investment bolster this franchise operating efficiency and continue to yield market share gains across every category. This was highlighted by a more than 3 percentage point gain in flavored sparkling beverages, mainly driven by Sprite, which is now the leading brand in its segment, and a substantial increase in sport drinks, where Powerade now has reached a market share of more than 30%. Our revenue management capability, our currency hedging strategy, and our operating discipline continue to deliver solid improvement in our gross profit and EBITDA margins, reaching close to 20% EBITDA margin for the year. In Venezuela, self-operating and economic environment, we experience a 2% volume decline. In spite of this, we continue to gain market share, highlighted by a more than 3 percentage point increase in colas and an increase in water. We continue to protect the profitability of our Venezuela franchise through our focused revenue management initiatives, efficiency gains, and production of the most profitable and fastest rotating SKUs. 2015 marked the third anniversary of our entry into the Philippines, a promising long-term growth opportunity. Over this period, we have successfully transformed the face of this operation to drive direct relationship with our clients, introduce a flexible one-way PET portfolio, focus on our core brand, and importantly, transform this franchise supply chain through investments of more than $400 million, which were generated by this operation. Our game-changing Mismo 250 and 300 milliliter one-way presentation continue to deliver solid results for our sparkling beverage portfolio, enabling our one-way presentations to gain 320 basis points of our mix of core sparkling beverages to reach 38.2% for the year. To complement this new flexible portfolio, we launched Timeout, a new taller, slimmer, 8-ounce returnable glass presentation at 7 Filipino pesos. And we continue to reinforce Casalo, our 750 milliliter returnable glass presentation. Thanks to these and other initiatives, we grew our core sparkling beverage volumes by 7% and transactions by 9% for the year. This renewed PET portfolio has allowed us to gain pricing and revenue management flexibility, which has enabled us to deliver increased revenues. More importantly, as a result of our ongoing strategic transformation, our business in the Philippines delivered positive operational and financial results for the year. We are encouraged by this operation's continued improvement as we continue the profitable evolution of our business in the Philippines. Moving on to our financial performance, our comparable net income for the year generated 4.59 Mexican pesos per share. Adjusting for a one-time tax benefit recorded last year in Brazil, our comparable earnings per share grew 6% for the year. The main factors affecting our reported earnings per share for the year were higher interest expense in Brazil, a foreign exchange loss related to the depreciation of the Mexican peso as applied to our U.S. dollar-denominated debt position of approximately $650 million, and operating currency fluctuation effects resulting from the devaluation of our operation currencies on our dollar-denominated accounts payable. With the purpose of reducing counterparty risk during the fourth quarter of 2015, we reset the terms of the swaps used to change dollar-denominated debt into Brazilian reais, in connection with the acquisition of Spaipa and Fluminense in Brazil 2013. As a result, we recorded a payment of advance interest expense due to the interest rate differential between the level at which the dollar debt was originally swapped and the level at which it was reset in the recoupon. As of the end of 2015, our net debt to EBITDA ratio, including cross-currency rate swaps, was 1.57 times. This has dropped from 1.76 times at the end of 2014. We continue the evolutionary transformation of our organization's capability, skills, and operating models to capture profitable future growth. To help propel this transformation, our Center of Excellence not only enables centralized collaboration and knowledge sharing to benefit our operations, but also provides the potential to generate significant operating efficiencies and savings, along with opportunities to defer CapEx through better asset management and innovative distribution models. Moreover, we continue to relentlessly reinforce our point of sale execution, our supply chain, and our diversified portfolio products and packages to meet our consumers' ever-changing needs and successfully navigate an evolving, challenging market environment. To this end, we maintain a disciplined approach to capital allocation as we continue to optimize our maintenance, growth, and strategic capital expenditure to maximize our return on invested capital and deliver sustainable profitable growth for our shareholders. This year, we continue to increase transactions ahead of volume growth in key markets such as Mexico, Colombia, and Argentina. We further deliver balanced transaction growth with steel barriers representing 43% of our incremental transactions for the year, while maintaining or improving our market share across all of our countries. We successfully increase average prices per case in line with or above inflation in most of our markets. Supported by this top-line performance, together with our active hedging and procurement strategy and our financial and operating discipline, we deliver EBITDA margin expansions in almost every operation, highlighted by Mexico, Brazil, and Argentina. The performance of our Philippines operation remains encouraging, delivering strong volume and transaction growth in our core beverage portfolio, generating important cost and expense savings through our improved logistics and manufacturing capacity, and ultimately enable us to deliver consistent, profitable results moving forward. Innovation underscore our portfolio continued development and performance as exemplified by the launch of our sparkling orange and lemonade in Mexico, our reinforced Guaraná portfolio and returnable presentations in Brazil, and notably the performance of our Santa Clara portfolio, where we more than double our volumes through our expand client covers in the traditional trade channel and our home delivery platform. Finally, supported by our commercial, manufacturing, and distribution and logistics center of excellence, we continue to transform our management and operating models to deliver solid, improving top and bottom line results and increased return for our shareholders. As always, thank you for your continued trust and support in Coca-Cola FEMSA, and we would like now to open the call for any questions, operator.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow us to know to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we'll take our first question from Luca Zapiccia with Goldman Sachs.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I wanted to follow up on two markets. One on Colombia. Maybe if you can give us more background on the positive volume momentum that you keep maintaining there, and you know, how do you expect that to trend in 2016? But also, what is driving it in terms of execution, in terms of pricing strategy, in terms of market share dynamics? Maybe that would be helpful. And then secondly, unsurprisingly, we keep seeing volumes in Brazil suffering. You're going to enter probably easier comps now in 2016. So, just wondering whether you start seeing some degree of a floor in the volume performance there, in terms of growth, in terms of outlook for this year. And you keep reiterating or highlighting how market share trends have actually been supportive. So, how do we reconcile that with the type of volume decline that we continue to see?
Good morning, Luca. In Mexico, I think that we have been looking at a consumer that has been recovering, the consumer confidence, and in a way, as I mentioned during the speech, the remittances and some of the indicators. We look at the retail operations that have been reporting recently, we see good numbers in the economy. So I think that the name of the game in Mexico for this coming year is to continue to deliver affordability to our consumers in some of the areas that we still need to provide an affordable product, and for us to be able to continue increasing prices to compensate not only the inflation rate, but also the effects of some of the internal costs that we have. As you know, a good portion of our raw materials are dollar denominated, and we have been trying to pass along those cost increases to our consumers. I think that in general, we are seeing stable market share in Mexico. We have very large price gaps versus our competitors. Therefore, in different categories, you might see some small declines, but very, very small declines in market share. But we are favoring the price increases, even though that might imply a small market share erosion in volume terms, so that we can maintain our margins. We have been doing some innovative launches like this Limonanara and Naranjinara that have been growing very importantly. That's why you see the performance of flavor CSDs outperforming colors. And I think that, again, the name of the game is how can we continue to protect the profitability of our Mexican operation in a very volatile environment in terms of the foreign FX volatility. In terms of raw material prices, we are seeing PET prices coming down. We are seeing sugar prices coming up a little bit. But in general, I think that we can argue that we have what has been very successful taking a strategy over the last 2 or 3 years. You have heard that we use bands where we protect some of the volatility of the cost structure that we have in the raw materials. So for example, in the case of Mexico, we already have hedged around 40 to 45% of our needs for raw materials for next year. So we hope that this will also help us, as it did in 2015, in terms of us being able to protect some of this cost pressure that we have. This is very important, Luca, because as I mentioned, as we have very high price gaps versus our competitors, it's very important that we are not pushed to increase prices more than what is needed because of this FX volatility. I think that finally in Mexico, this concept of the center of excellence, as we roll out some of these new processes and way to approach and the way of approaching this commercial practices and supply chain practices, we are expecting also to see some savings going forward that would help the profitability of our operation in Mexico. So all in all, in Mexico, I think that we are seeing a consumer that is behaving a little bit better, responding to some of the promotional activity that we have. So we see volumes growing, we see maintaining our market shares, we see our prices moving with inflation or slightly better than that in order for us to compensate for internal costs. And you see a very big effort in having a lot of effectiveness and efficiency in our SG&A expense. All of that should combine for us to maintain or improve a little bit our margins for 2016. If we move to Brazil, Brazil is a story that basically has to do with top line, as you correctly pointed out. The story of Brazil is how do we grow volumes because the consumer is not there. The consumer confidence is very low. The consumer is very indebted, has a lot of debt. They are starting to stop purchasing some durable goods and some consumer goods, and therefore our volumes are suffering. The rest of the indicators in Brazil are good. We have very good cost control. We have good cost of raw materials. We have some hedges that have been also put in place in Brazil. For 2016, half of our needs in Brazil have already been hedged. So we feel comfortable in that front. And we have seen improvement in the efficiency of our SG&A, and we see lower SG&A expenses compared to our revenues. But the name of the game is that the volumes are very soft. January is a very difficult month to try to predict the trend for the full 2016. But January had very, very low volumes because January of 2015 was a very, very good month. So volumes were down, high single digit numbers during January. We are starting to see a better, we are seeing a better February, but I think that the name of the game in Brazil is when are we going to see the consumer coming back to our products. I think that all the strategies that we have developed over the last 2 years are very important, basically looking to protect our profits and looking to put in front of the consumer an affordable package. That's why when we finished this production plant in the state of Minas Gerais, we basically finally got to a stage where we have returnable production capacity close to our consumers in all the territories. So 1 liter returnable glass, 2 liter returnable PET have been growing importantly, which is an indication that the consumer wants to buy our product, but is moving away from the single-serve presentations and buying the multi-serve presentations as a way of having a more affordable product. So the intelligence of the capacity that we have of presenting the consumer different affordability, different products with different affordability would be very important in the next 2 years, because we think that the consumer will continue to be in a tough environment for the next year and a half or 2 years. I hope that this is a good explanation for your question.
No, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you very much. Maybe just a very quick on Brazil. Your market share improvement, so you know that arguably doesn't have to do with pricing, given that, you know, or are you seeing elements of trading down, you know, for consumers somehow, you know, switching to other brands or other products at lower price points? How do you reconcile your market share gains with the weaker consumer and the risk of trading down maybe in some categories?
Yeah, I think that the store market share is and believe me, every time we see volumes, for example, this month of January, as I mentioned, that we have a high single-digit volume decline, I was worried about market share. But whenever we receive, and we have a delay with the Nielsen data, we receive information, and then we see again colors where we have a very high market share maintaining our number, flavors increasing a little bit market share because of the quality strategy that I described, and then you have peas and oranges growing in market share. So it's a clear signal that the industry is behaving very close or similarly to our performance, which again is an indication that the consumer is still injured. Let me use that word, but it's not there, the conflict. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from Fernando Ferreira with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Mr. Ferreira, your line is open.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Hector, I had two questions, please, if I may. First one, I would like to hear a little bit more on your price mix expectations in three countries, Colombia, Argentina, and Brazil in 2016. Given the weaker currencies in these three countries, how do you feel about, and the higher inflation, obviously, right? How do you feel about pricing there? And then second question, I have to ask about the U.S. refranchising, right? Last week, James Quincy was very focused on the acceleration that Coke wants to do on the refranchising plans and in the U.S., right? And how do you feel about this new model where they agree to sell the production assets as well? And if you have any update on that front. Thank you.
Good morning, Fernando. I think that let me give you a general comment for all the franchises, not only Colombia, Argentina, and Brazil. I think that you have heard me during many quarters, and basically for the last 2 years, us starting to report transactions, and I think that is a very important element here that we believe that we are in a much better alignment with the Coca-Cola Company in the fact of looking at revenues, transactions, and not so much gallons or volume. So volume is important, market share numbers are important, but share of sales is also probably more relevant. So our plans for 2016 basically calls for trying to continue to improve the pricing mix formula in each of our countries. In areas where we have higher inflation, as in the case of Argentina, Brazil, and I don't know, I know that Venezuela is not that important, but Venezuela is also a country where we have very high inflation. We are trying to at least keep up with that, with the pace of inflation. And our plans for 2016 even call for some real price increases in real terms ahead of inflation. I think that that's a very important element in order for us to be able to maintain the profitability, especially some of the volatility on FX is translated into inflation, and especially into cost inflation because of our raw materials. In the specific case of Colombia, for the last 2 or 3 years, we were embarked in what we call Plan Colombia, where we lower the prices of our products to make it more affordable and to really create additional traction in the volume trends in Colombia. I think that we have accomplished that because basically for the last 3 years we have grown volumes close to 10% every year, suffering a little bit on the profitability because we have lowered the prices. Now we are at a stage where we are recuperating some of these prices. My belief is that given the fact that the devaluation of the Colombian peso has also put a lot of pressure on our competitors. So whenever we have increased prices, our competitors have also followed, which is good news for us also, as we are facing a very strong competitor in Colombia. In Argentina, the consumer at the beginning of the year is also suffering a little bit because of the adjustment on the FX, the very strong adjustment that happened in December, where we moved basically from the 10, 11 pesos to 14 Argentine pesos per dollar. Salary negotiations have not been finished. They will be finished around May. So this is the case of an environment where most of the industries have already adjusted prices because of the devaluation of the Argentine peso, but the consumer has not received the salary increases. And therefore, the consumer is not necessarily going to our products or some of the other competitors or some other consumer products. But we think that Argentina, given the fact that the country and the individuals are not that level, they don't have a lot of debt because basic credit was not existent for many years, I think that is a story where we will see a very fast recuperation of the consumer. In the case of Brazil, it's a little bit more tricky because we see a consumer that has a lot of debt that is now trying to save a little bit more by repaying some of that debt. And we have seen in other industries also indications of very strong declines in top line. And as I mentioned, January was a tough month. We had a very difficult comparison versus January 2015, and I think that we have easier comparisons for the rest of the year. But in all of these three countries, given the fact that we are anticipating a higher inflation than what we had before, we will try to move prices ahead of inflation. With respect to the and as I mentioned, I think that the very positive note is that us together with the Coca-Cola Company are focusing more on revenues and profits as opposed to just volume numbers or gallons. No? With respect to the U.S. Refranchising, we know that the Coca-Cola Company has expressed in several locations that they would like to finish with this by 2017. We do not have anything new to report so far in terms of us engaging the Coca-Cola Company in any negotiations at all. We have not been approached still with those issues. I think that the U.S. market is in a very interesting market, especially some of the states that are still in the hands of the Coca-Cola Company, especially in states that border the Mexico territory. And we are very glad that the Coca-Cola Company is changing its model, excuse me, to a model where the bottler will have a control on the production capacity, because we think that over many years that we have been operating this business, We now have a very, very good expertise on everything that has to do with the supply chain, and I think that it's important that if you are competing in that market, that you have the lowest cost possible in terms of production and distribution. So I think that it's a positive note that the Coca-Cola company is moving in that direction. Thank you, Fernando.
Great. Thank you, Hector.
Our next question comes from Antonio Gonzalez with Credit Suisse.
Hi, good morning, Hector and team, and congratulations on the results. I have just two quick questions. First, on the write-off that you did on your equity accounts, I wanted to ask, A, is it mostly Venezuela, or is there anything else, say, on the Brazil acquisitions of Spipa and Fluminense that is relevant? And second, just, I guess, technically, why did you decide to not take the hit through the P&L and just do it directly in the balance sheet? So that's my first question. And then secondly, I just wanted to ask very quickly, you did some comments earlier on the margins that you expect for Mexico, et cetera. I just wanted to confirm that overall, when you look at all of the markets, do you think that the given the currency depreciation in Mexico, Brazil, Argentina, and so forth, you will be able to maintain a flattish or increasing margins on a consolidated basis this year? Thanks, Hector.
Good morning, Tony. Let me see if I follow the first question that you have with respect to the balance sheet items. What we have there in the cumulative translation effect, I think it's called the account, basically has to do with all the translation effects of the different countries into Mexican pesos. So as for 2015, as we have Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, and Venezuela depreciating their currencies more than the Mexican peso, when we translate those accounts, those numbers into Mexican pesos, we have this effect, which is basically a balance sheet item. Everything that has to do with balance sheet accounts, the translation effect goes into the equity. If it's a P&L number that is affected by the evaluation, then it goes to our P&L. I don't know if that was your question, Antonio. Is this a specific number in the equity where we have, and the effect basically is as follows. We have the equity that we have at the beginning is increased by the retained earnings of 2015, and then is reduced by this translation effect and the dividends that we pay. And that's basically why we have a small reduction in, like a 1 billion peso reduction in our capital. Are you referring, is that your question, Antonio?
That's very clear. I was wondering why it wouldn't go through the P&L, but, you know, per your response, there's no write-off of the goodwill of the recent transactions or anything like that, in which case you would need to do it through the P&L, right?
No. Well, it doesn't have anything to do with goodwill. I think it's just the translation of the balance sheet accounts of these countries into Mexican pesos, and given the fact that the devaluation of those currencies was higher than the Mexican, than the, I mean, they devaluated versus the Mexican peso.
That's very clear.
That's following the accounting rules. Okay.
That's very clear. That was the question, yes, Hector.
And then with respect to your second question, we are basically the answer is yes. We will try to maintain our margins despite the volatility that we have. I have to say that if you look at all the predictions for FX of the different countries, it's very tough. I mean, you have economies that have the Mexican peso at the 20 peso level, and you have some economies that see the Mexican peso coming back to below 17. So I think that our idea, and again, as I mentioned in other times, we are very active in hedging in our hedging strategy. We do a 12-month rolling, where the closest 3 months we have a larger portion of our needs basically covered. We never go to 100% cover because that will also imply taking a risk. And this is not a profit center. It's just a way of trying to give some stability of cost to our operators so that they have predictability on their cost and therefore predictability on the price increases that they have to pass to the consumer. Just to give you an idea, as I mentioned, in Mexico we have between 40-45% already covered for 2016. In Brazil we are closer to 50%. Colombia we have 30%. And Argentina, which we were anticipating a devaluation and we started to do some hedges since last year, even for 2016, we are closer to 60% of our needs already covered at what we believe are very attractive rates. Having said all that, price increases with inflation or slightly ahead of inflation, some tailwinds in terms of the PET prices because of the oil prices on a worldwide basis, some headwinds on sugar prices because we are seeing sugar coming up a little bit, and some of the cost control and efficiency that we have introduced with the Center of Excellence. Basically, my best prediction is that we will maintain margins or improve slightly the margins on a consolidated basis. Okay?
Perfect. Thank you, Hector. Thank you, Hector.
Next, we'll hear from Carlos Lavoy with HSBC. Mr. Lavoy, your line is open.
Hello? Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Two questions relating to Brazil, Hector, please. The first one is, can you comment on, give us an update on how long you think it'll take you to get price compliance in Brazil up to the national average of the entire system? And second of all, whatever evidence can you share with us of improved point-of-sale execution in Brazil? The reason I ask the second question is because we see volume declines of 5.5%, but 8% decline in transactions, which would seem to indicate that there's difficulty in the traditional trade, and it's hard to tell from the outside how much of that is the economy and how much of it is that some of the execution measures you're putting into place aren't yet taking traction.
Good morning, Carlos. I think that, as I mentioned, I believe it was the last conference call. We have there are positive things about being in Sao Paulo because it's a very large concentration of people in a small area, and similar to Mexico City, it brings some efficiencies in terms of the distribution and supply chain. The difficult part of being in the capital city of the country is that that's where all the competitors are present. And in Brazil, a city like Sao Paulo, it's very complex, it's very large, and all the competitors are very similar to Mexico City, where you have competitors that are not present in other regions of the country. They just focus their attention in the larger areas. I think that we have been improving in price of execution. It's complex. Let me tell you why. Because at this specific moment in time, we have been retooling some of the price points. And let me give you some examples. You heard me talk about the 1, 2, 3 price point, that's magic price point to the consumer. But given the devaluation of the Brazilian real, plus the inflation that we are seeing in our costs, it's very difficult to maintain, for example, the 1 real price point. So we are moving that from 1 to 125. In some cases, the retail, the traditional trade that is a little more sophisticated also in these big cities, have already taken some of these prices up, and therefore price compliance was not as good. in cans, which is an important SKU in Brazil. We are moving from the 350 that we are selling at 3 reals. Now we are lowering the size to 310 in slim can, and as a way of trying to maintain the 3 real price points. That can is growing very importantly, but the 350 is coming down also very importantly, and we are dedicating the 350 can to supermarkets. So I think that our operators are doing a good job given all the changes that we are doing. We have been improving in some of the execution and some of the things that the Coca-Cola company runs. I think that the issue that you mentioned about volumes declining 5% and transactions declining 8% has to do a lot with the fact that we are selling more and more multi-serve presentations. So in liters, we are not declining as much, but the consumer is switching to larger presentations to share with the family or with a friend, as opposed to buying the single serve presentation, and that's the trend that is affecting transactions coming down. I think that the important element in Brazil, we should not be distracted from that, is that we are improving margins in Brazil, even though we are going through a very difficult macroeconomic and consumer environment. With inflation, devaluation, everything, we were able to increase EBITDA margins slightly. And we have continued to gain market share, which is also a very important element that will give us, you know, the staying power of our operation in Brazil over the long term. I think that those are the main elements that I can comment to you at this time. Carlos.
Thanks, Hector.
Thank you, Carlos.
Next, we'll hear from Andrea Teixeira with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, hello all. Thanks for taking the question. I think we extensively worked on the margin front, but I just wanted to get a little bit of color on the revenue front. If you think that, you know, obviously you have easier comps in the fourth quarter, but how you're seeing 2016 as you started, like, you know, with a tougher comp there, and that specifically on Mexico. And then obviously in Brazil, I'm assuming with what you just described has been, you know, an easy market now, despite your market share gains, of course. I mean, what I want to also to explore, if you can comment a little bit of the refranchising of the U.S., which apparently has had some changes recently for good, I guess. If you can comment if you've seen indeed an acceleration of interest or movement there. And lastly, on the hedges, as you said, like you've had some hedges, but if you can comment on how it had evolved. And so part of your explanation that you aim to have, you know, a flat margin, if that has to do with like more consistent hedging through the region. And lastly, if you can touch, I'm sorry, on Argentina, if you've seen better volume trends there, given the shortfall in the fourth quarter. Thank you.
Good morning, Andrew. I think that let me start with Mexico top line. I think that if you look at what's happened in Mexico over the last 2 years, we have the tax. Volumes came down importantly, close to 5%. We have grown volumes not to the levels that we had in 2013, but we are very close to those levels. And we are seeing a year for next year where we see some volume increase in Mexico. Probably closer to GDP type of growth in Mexico. So somewhere around between 2.5-3% volume growth, that would be my call for Mexico. Brazil is a little bit tougher because, again, the consumer is not there. It's not responding to a lot of the promotions that we have. The trend that we see is the consumer moving, as I was explaining in the previous question, to big packages, to the multi-serve packages, away from the one-way packages, and they are moving to returnable packages also, which is it's basically a very clear signal that the consumer is looking for our product, but they are looking for an affordable price on that.
You mean in Mexico, or sorry, the line is not very clear.
In Mexico, to summarize what I was saying is, I'm seeing the consumer, a better consumer environment this 2016, and therefore we will see some kind of volume growth similar to GDP. That's my summary, let's say, for Mexico. In Brazil, I think that the consumer it's suffering a lot from, as you very well know, from all the increases that they have in electricity, transportation, and all of those very basic expenses. The devaluation of the real is very large. So, and the consumer has a lot of debt. So, my feeling is that Brazil will see volumes that are very similar to what we saw in 2015, maybe a slight increase over that. I think that the industry is expecting something similar to that. And even though we have been suffering in volumes, we have been able to maintain or increase market share in all of the markets. So the name of the game in Brazil is to have an affordable product in front of the consumer, maintain some of the magic price points so that the single serve presentations continue to have some traction, and therefore we are adjusting those presentations to smaller sizes, but still maintaining that magic price. So we see a consumer that is not necessarily with a lot of resources to spend on consumer goods products. But we will see volumes either flat or slightly increasing versus 2015. With respect to the U.S. refund tax...
Right? Sorry, that would be a market share gain, actually. No, I'm just saying that will continue to embed market share gains in Brazil. Because GDP is obviously declining.
Yes, as we mentioned, we have been having very good performance in that front, in the market share front, over many months now, and we think that we will continue to increase market share in Brazil.
Okay, great. Okay, and then on the hedges, just to clarify, you're putting more hedges in place than before? Because some of the comments, and I know you extensively explained, so I apologize that I want to go back to the cost side. But for the hedges, you continue to renew those or even increase in some of the countries, I mean, or hedging also against the price of sugar? Is that a fair assumption?
Well, I think that in general what I can say in this is, as I mentioned, we move, and let me give you some examples. For the following 3 months, we basically move between 40-70% of our needs should be hedged. We don't like the exchange rate, as is, for example, the present moment on some of the currencies. We move to the lower band, closer to the 40%. If we think that there is an opportunity because we see a further deterioration of the exchange rate, we will move closer to the upper band. During 2015, because of we were starting with this volatility, we were closer to the higher side of these bands. During 2016, we have a smaller, we have a lower amount of hedges as a percentage of our needs. But I think that these are very reasonable, and I was mentioning in a previous question, to give you an idea, in Mexico, we are around 43% of our needs for the full year. In Brazil, we are around 50. In Colombia, we are around 30. And Argentina, we are very close to 60%. In Argentina, that was one of the cases where we started a few months ago, started to hedge some of the 2016, because we were seeing, anticipating this devaluation. So we were moving ahead very fast, and in Argentina is one of the countries where we are kind of at the top of the limits that we have self-imposed in our processes internally. With respect to the U.S. refranchise, we are certainly interested in analyzing that whenever that happens. I know that the Coca-Cola Company has been a little more vocal about finalizing this process by 2017, and I mentioned that bordering the states to Mexico would be very interesting for us. And with respect to the consumer in Argentina, we are seeing a consumer that was trying to buy a lot of assets and consumer goods towards the end of the year before the big depreciation of the currency, and now the consumer is a little farther away from buying stuff, basically because most of the salary negotiations in Argentina will happen during April and May. That's when most of the contracts, the labor contracts, are renewed. And specifically during the first quarter, you will see an adjustment of most of the adjustment for the prices of most of the items that the consumer will buy, because everyone is adjusting prices because of the devaluation of the currency, but the consumer has not received the salary increases yet. So what I'm expecting is a very tough first quarter. Probably April will be a tough month also, and then probably a better performance in the second half of the year as the consumer has better salaries.
Okay. No, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just was thinking.
No. Thank you. No, I was going to say that will answer your questions. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from Alex Robards with Citi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I wanted to go back first to Mexico. The comments I appreciate about your view on volume this year, but I maybe just sticking to the top line outlook in Mexico. The other side is price, and you know you've done a good job in the last quarter and frankly last year in getting average pricing on a comparable basis a couple points above inflation. As you think about the better consumer in Mexico, as you qualified them this year, how do you reconcile the need to continue to pass on the dollar COGS pressures, but at the same time, as you said earlier, there are some areas where you need to bring in some affordability, where you feel, I guess, in the portfolio in Mexico, that you're higher than you'd like to be pricing-wise. I mean, would it be fair to assume that it's in the jugs and in the non-carbs where perhaps you want to bring the affordability to the customer? And if those are the areas, again, how do we think about juxtaposing that with the need to kind of have and handle this internal cost inflation that you talk about, which is in large extent related to the FX. So just kind of thinking about the ability to get pricing beyond inflation this year in Mexico and where the areas you are looking to inject the affordability.
Good morning, Alex. I think that your question describes very well a lot of the dynamics that we have in Mexico. As I mentioned in a previous question, there are different Mexicos on this industry. Mexico City is a very tough environment because you have all competitors converging here. That there are competitors in Mexico City that are not present in other large cities of the country like Monterrey, Guadalajara. Some of them are not present in Puebla, but some of them are getting closer to Puebla. And those are some of the things that we need to balance. And within the consumer, you also find opportunities. You have a middle class that is getting a little bit more relief as the economy is improving, and they start to spend a little bit more on single-serve presentations that, as you know, works very well with our price mix, with the equation for price mix. There are other areas of the country, of the city, or the country also, where you need to provide an affordable price point to the consumer. And as you start to have pressure on the cost structure because of the depreciation of the currency, you need to start also trying to change the size of the presentation to maintain a price point. For example, we are moving 600 milliliters is very important for us in the whole country. We are also launching 500 milliliters PET one way at an attractive price as a way of having that presentation and then going that presentation is still below the 10 Mexican pesos per bottle to the consumer. So those are the strategies that are very important. We need to continue with 2.5 returnable PET in some of the poorer areas of Mexico City or poorer areas of the country where affordability is very important. I think that the opportunity that a recovery in the economy could bring is the fact that the pricing mix that as you have many different SKUs, and we have brought about this for many quarters. We do have a very complex portfolio, but at the same time, that gives us the flexibility to provide to the consumer and to the different price points to the consumer occasion. And we have been improving in analyzing data and having a more digital platform in our commercial structure, we do have much better information that we can take advantage in terms of improving the top line of our operation. So Mexico is a place where we feel that we have the capacity to balance precisely what you are saying. Having an affordable product for the areas of the city, or areas of the country where we need an affordable package, and taking the opportunity of revenue growth management in the areas and the consumption occasions where we see this opportunity. All in all, that will call for Mexico to have a price point, a final price formula that when you look mix effect plus the price increases that we will do to compensate for this, we will see a pricing that is on my expectation that it will grow ahead of inflation. We should not forget about NCBs and the growth that we are having there. NCBs do carry a better price formula for us. Tea, Powerade, the Santa Clara, the daily efforts that we are facing, those are also efforts that bring a lot of complexity to our structure, but I think that we are very good at managing that complexity, and we are very prepared on that front. And conceptually, in paper, these numbers, this complexity should bring also a better pricing formula for us as we improve on the NCD execution. Water, you have always, for many quarters now, you have seen a declining volumes in water, and that's basically a reflection that we are reducing commercial terms to the trade and improving pricing to the consumer, because simply water is a very low margin SKU or product or category compared to CSDs, and we are trying to improve execution in that category. That's why what we are doing in terms of launching water with some juice content, like the Ciel Extreme flavor water or the sparkling Ciel effort that we are doing in Mexico to have a very nice glass bottle in restaurants. If we are successful in that, we also bring some profitability to our water business that is, as I mentioned, one of the it is one of the areas where we see opportunity to improve margins. No? So with that, I hope I gave you a good explanation on these.
For sure. No, that was very comprehensive. So the 2.5 or the kind of GDP type of volume growth in Mexico was associated with pricing ahead of inflation. No, that's fair and clear. And thanks for that. The second question is on Asia. And I guess, you know, our read on Coke bottler consolidation, you know, kind of suggests that this is an area where we could see some stepped up activity on the M&A front. And, you know, I think back 3 years ago to what Carlos said right on the outset of your deal in the Philippines, that, you know, other markets could present themselves. So the specific question on Asia is, given your, as you said, the transformation has been successful in the Philippines 3 years since the deal, since you started there, does it make sense for you to contemplate taking ownership sooner than later in the Philippines, when we think about, you know, kind of Atlanta's speech or seeming to be getting asset light quicker rather than later? And if that is the case, you know, is it something that you think about, you know, in the next 12 to 24 months? And when you look at big, you know, it's clear that there's some other interesting markets on that list, Myanmar, Vietnam. Kind of comment a little bit about Coca-Cola FEMSA's interest there, which I think was implied by Carlos's comments 3 years ago. So essentially, your, you know, COF's view over the next few years in Asia, that's kind of the question. Any color would be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. I think that the story in Asia is as follows. We clearly entered the Philippine market as a way of us, and I think that I should say also for the Coca-Cola Company, for us and the Coca-Cola Company to test our capabilities and see if we are successful in that area. The Philippine market is the most westernized of the, in our industry, the Philippine market is one of the most westernized in the Asia region, because the U.S. was present there for many years, Coke has been there for many years, and we have talked about that in the past. So the strategic intent of us going and having a big share in the Philippines is basically with the idea of expanding the Asian market. We have been there for 3 years. I think that we are improving in a lot of metrics in the Philippines, in terms of execution, in terms of route to market, in terms of how we are transforming the portfolio, in terms of how core brands, especially brand Coca-Cola, is growing in the Philippine markets. We suffered for 2.5 years the reduction of the local brands, including Pop-Cola, that was kind of an oxymoron, having Coca-Cola and Pop-Cola being sold in the red top. So I think that we have a lot of positive things. We have improved a lot on the quality of the products and the supply chain. I think that we still need to get to a better level of profitability in this market. It's very competitive, low prices. I think that we are doing a good job, but margins are not still at the level that we would like to see. So just to remind everyone, we own 51% of the Philippines. We have an option to buy the other 49%. I think that the first step in the expansion of the Philippines conceptually should be buying that 49%. I think that, unfortunately, sometimes, I mean, we still have 4 more years to go on that option, and if at some point in time we are presented with an opportunity to buy some of the other territories like Vietnam or Myanmar that you mentioned, I think that we definitely will take a look at that, because we are now more comfortable in the Philippines, and we know that getting some traction in volumes, which are part of the strategy for the following years, will help us in the profitability front. If I could do like a Santa Claus list, I'd prefer to exercise the option 4 years from now, and then to have the other territories to be present for an M&A opportunity. I don't know if that's going to be the timing of these things, but definitely our presence in the Philippines is a very, very clear indication that we are interested in those markets. Okay?
Yes, that's very clear. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Our final question will come from Geronimo de Guzman with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Wanted to follow up first on the Philippines. What I noticed was that your sales were growing less than the volumes. So I just wanted to understand what is driving that. Are you having to be more promotional to drive that volume growth, or is there something else that's driving that?
Yes, good morning, Geronimo. 2015 was a year where we let me go one still 1 year behind. 2014 we suffered a very, very competitive environment because as we launched this new presentation, Mismo and the introduction of Casano, which is the family size is 750 milliliters returnable glass was. But especially with Mismo, that was a game changer because it was the introduction of a one-way PET presentation. That, during 2014, the competition reduced the price of some of the returnable single-serve presentation, and that forced us to adjust the prices downward a little bit during 2014. 2015, we have improved on the pricing, but all in all, the mix has moved in the direction of packages that are more affordable because the competition is still there. I think that the Philippines, and that's why I was referring to this issue about profitability. The Philippine markets are starting, as I mentioned, we are doing a lot of transformational things in terms of portfolio, the route to market of the supply chain. We have a lot of indication that we are in the right track on that, but it's still a market where we need to grow volumes in order to get a better traction on the profitability. So part of the strategy that we have for 2016 is to maintain price points at an attractive levels and try to get a better volume number. As a reflection, just, and it was a surprise to everyone, January numbers were very good. It was close to 20% increase in volume. I don't think that January will necessarily repeat every single month going forward, but we are achieving that by maintaining price points that are very competitive. I think that the name of the game in the Philippines is to get traction with the volume. That when I say traction, meaning increasing volume, and trying to maintain prices with inflation. I know that we will have a lot of pressure from our competitors because they are important in size. It's both Pepsi and RCCOL. But I think that we have now the correct SKUs, the correct flavors, the correct sizes, the correct price points, and I think that we have the correct execution to start bringing, you know, revenue management initiatives and efficiencies in the operation that will bring a little bit better profitability. The profitability in the Philippines is still low, and you see that in our financial statements. So I hope that I answered your question with this.
That was very helpful. Thank you. And then follow-up on Mexico, what I saw was the operating expenses, you had pressure in the fourth quarter. I know for the year, you still had efficiency, but wanted to know if there was anything specific that was driving that pressure, given that it was a better quarter in terms of volumes. And then with these centers of excellence, I was just wondering if there was any specific areas where you see the most opportunities in Mexico for greater efficiencies.
Yes, we do not have any specific on overhead or GMA. We do have some dollar denominated expenses, especially with respect to IT. Everything that relates to IT is dollarized. Even if you are buying from services from local suppliers. Most of the big companies have operations like HP or SAP. They have operations in Mexico, but the prices are dollars. There is nothing special there other than the effect of currency fluctuation on some of these expenses. The Center of Excellence, I do have this expectation that we'll start to see better efficiency in how we manage some of these things. Let me give you some examples. Instead of having production planning in each of the plants, we could have that centralized in whatever we decide to do it, more or less as a shared service. We are doing that now in Mexico, and having the experts of production planning just centralize in Mexico and do that function for all of the production plants around the world, or around the different countries. The same can be said about maintenance routines that are being planned with less people and with people that are experts in that area. So in a way, we are reducing the workforce of all the different production and distribution centers and having a group of experts doing some of those functions centers. I think that there's opportunity with the that will bring opportunities also for CAPEX deferral, that we better plan everything around the different countries. With the commercial center of excellence, we are moving a lot into digitalization of the handheld that the preseller has, having the preseller spending much more time in the field, because rather than going to the work to the distribution center every morning and every afternoon, given the mobile technology, he can leave directly from his house and start the first store that he needs to visit as opposed to going for instructions to the distribution center. So that will give us better granular segmentation of our clients, better data mining and analysis of all the how the consumer is behaving. Specific segmentation of initiatives and targeting a specific marketing initiatives so that the reseller will have basically by client a specific instructions that he needs to cover during his visit. But at the end of the day, he will have better time and better quality time with his client. So my expectation is that as we roll out this, and we are doing just the initial stages of these centers of excellence, especially in the commercial, in this last part that I was explaining, the digital platform, we are basically running out a test market in the city of León in Mexico that has been successful, and we will start to roll out that. That, in theory, will bring either better pricing or better volume, because we will have a much better analysis and control of the initiatives that we will be rolling out to our clients. Okay?
Yes, thank Mike, that's helpful. So, and then just one last question, and just kind of reading through some of the interest expense from the swaps, and in general, just kind of a broader question of, with the exposure that you have to U.S. dollar debt being 32% of your debt, I mean, how comfortable do you, given the volatility in FX, what's your comfort level with this kind of exposure, and do you see any kind of debt management initiatives going forward to kind of change that mix? Hello?
Give one moment. Leave one moment, everyone. There's a brief interruption in today's call. Tell everyone while we reconnect the line. Please hold, everyone. We're trying to reconnect Mr. Trevino's line. Please hold everyone. We're trying to reconnect Mr. Trevino's line. Mr. Trevino, you're on.
Hello? Hello. Sorry, I don't know what happened, but we got disconnected. And I don't know if everyone here what I was saying about the last Geronimo question. Basically, Geronimo, what you're seeing is we had the meeting with the board of directors yesterday, and the finance committee reconfirmed the limits that we have of maximum $700 million exposure. Right now we have $650 million dollar exposure. We feel comfortable with that, given the size of the company and the low leverage that we have. And until the next board meeting that is at the end of April, this is the maximum amount that we have. And so I would anticipate we will stay with that level, around $650 million maximum exposure during this quarter. Okay?
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, brother. Sorry for the trouble with the communication.
That will conclude the question and answer session. Mr. Trevino, I'll turn the conference over to you for closing comments.
Okay, thank you for your interest in Coca-Cola FEMSA. As always, me and the team are available to answer any remaining questions, and thank you so much for the trust in our company. Thank you.
That does conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation.